The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we welcome you back. It has been quite an eventful 2 hours. We began exactly 2 hours ago with Auburn coach Gus Malzahn. We previewed the LSU game, went to Holly Rowe in Clemson, talking about the Trevor Lawrence news. We just heard from Roy Kramer, the legendary SEC commissioner who turned 91 today. A little bit later on, Todd Blackledge on tomorrow's Alabama-Mississippi State game, and Chris Fowler later in the show from Happy Valley getting ready for Ohio State. Right now it is Cole Kubrick's time. He'll be on the call tomorrow for UK and UGA. And Cole, it's always great to have you with us. Appreciate it. And there are just so many things to chew on. Let's first talk about the game you're going to be doing. Georgia, first time we've seen them since a rather unsettling second half in Tuscaloosa. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. I appreciate you having me. Good to be back with you. I'm excited to see this Georgia football team. A lot of people disappointed with the way that they looked against Alabama. We at least thought that defense was going to have some more success. I thought the defensive line and the edge rushers would be able to be a little bit more problematic. And we talked to Dan Lanning about it last night. He said, listen, that was part of what we needed in that game. But he said communication was the big thing that they have worked on in these 2 weeks leading into this game against Kentucky, especially on that side of the football, that maybe some guys thought that they could just go out there, line up, and get away with being more talented or having more guys around them that could make plays. Said, we need to communicate better before the snap, after the snap, and those are the things that are going to lead us to be the best defense in college football. So it's going to be a big test for them on the ground. Obviously, they're going to see a new quarterback in the Kentucky uniform. So I'm anxious to see maybe one of the best teams in college football take the field again and maybe what they've altered to potentially make that championship run.
I know you've seen this Kentucky team, but you know, they would have to go down as one of the most difficult teams in the SEC to explain. They've had good appearances, great appearances against Tennessee, and then a few lackluster, especially last week. I mean, they've been competitive, but they have failed to convert. What's going on with Kentucky other than the aforementioned quarterback change?
Kentucky's a team, Paul, you kind of said it. They're very difficult to pinpoint. To me, when I watch them and I see the way that they've played, the games that they've been in and maybe haven't won, the games they've lost, they don't have a lot of different ways that they can go out and win a football game. And thankfully, that defense under Brad White has actually allowed them in a couple of games to be in better positions to go out and win. If they're not running the football well, if they're not controlling the clock, winning field position, keeping the other offense off the field, that's not an advantageous game for them. It's not one that they're most likely going to be in late. Now, they got into a little bit of a track meet with Ole Miss, and they were fortunate because of some turnovers to have a chance to win that game late. But you look at where they were the first half against Auburn. They go up big against Tennessee. They can play their style of game in the second half in that matchup. When they're playing that kind of football, they're a really good team. They're as physical as any team in the SEC, really on both sides of the ball, even though the front seven's a little banged up on defense. But once they get out of that comfort zone, it's a totally different deal. You know, it's like they're a guy that I guess drives a sports car, and all of a sudden you put him in a big off-road vehicle, he doesn't really know how to handle it. He doesn't know how to manage it. So once they get out of their comfort zone, they become a very different team very quickly. And I think more teams are saying, we'll play high risk to potentially slow down what you're best at and make you beat us other ways. I thought Eli Drinkwitz and company had a great plan last week. They played single safety. They loaded the box. They were very aggressive at the line of scrimmage, and it paid off. They were able to slow down the Kentucky rushing attack, and Terry Wilson and company could not beat them through the air. So they're going to have to find other ways to win, to be good, not just win games, but win plays, win a series, win a drive. And if they can't, this may turn into a long season for Coach Stoops.
Cole Kubrick with us. He's seen Auburn a few times as well as last week, and we had Gus Malzahn on, Cole, and you know the importance of this game. You've played in this game a number of times. Help us better understand what Auburn has to do tomorrow to avoid losing to what looks like an ascending LSU team right now.
Very, very interesting LSU team right now, Paul. You look at some of the youth on this team, and how they're beginning to come around. B.J. Olajuwon on the outside had a couple sacks last week. The guy that I've been really impressed with is Ayra Gilbert, the tight end. Yes, he can run. He can catch. Giant wingspan. Big body. But when you watch him in the run game the last 2 weeks, he's been really impressive in that part of his game. Against South Carolina, he looked a lot like Thaddeus Moss, who was a key cognizant in them winning a national championship last season. So that youth is beginning to gain some experience and gain a little bit of composure and some confidence. And if you're going to play a freshman quarterback, what's the one thing that you want as an offensive coordinator? Give me a run game. We've got to be able to run the football if I'm going to play a quarterback that hasn't started a game or really even attempted a pass. Well, LSU got it last week. The offensive line finally came around. They looked better. The backs ran hard. He had some help from the tight end, like I mentioned. And I thought T.J. Finley made great decisions, which of any young quarterback that I want to see, that's the first thing that I need to see from you if you're going to be successful. Just make good decisions. Take your checkdowns. Get out of the pocket when pressure's coming. Don't get out of the pocket too early. Slide. Don't take hits. Don't do anything unnecessary. And I thought Finley handled himself in a very interesting manner last week. Did a really nice job. So Auburn has some unknowns here. You've got players on this team that maybe have flashed for a game or two, but you haven't seen them a lot together. So how do you prepare for that? And I think with a freshman quarterback, if I'm Kevin Steele, I go into this game thinking, well, I want to confuse him, but Paul, Auburn flat out has not gotten enough from their defensive line this year. So can they stymie the LSU rushing attack with 5-6 in the box? That's going to be a tough matchup because last week it looks like against a very underrated South Carolina defensive line, by the way, they were able to get that run game going. Got to get Bo Nix comfortable. I really thought Chad Morris did an excellent job last week of saying, okay, you're a guy who likes to run around. You're going to scramble no matter what. You're going to use your legs. That's what you're confident with. You like to run into people. Cool. Let's design some of that. You can better help our team. You can better help yourself. You'll be more comfortable, and we'll potentially have more opportunities to be successful. They're still going to get to Seth Williams no matter what, no matter when, no matter where. That's going to happen. Do feel like they've gotten off and on with Anthony Schwartz. He's got to stay and be in a big part of the game plan. And losing Brandon Council was massive. This is still a very – even though Apuika has opted out, this is still a very good LSU defensive line. And the other thing with LSU, Paul, keep in mind, there's just a lot of new faces. You got a transfer inside linebacker. You got a freshman defensive end. You've got some youngsters on the back end that are having to play a little bit due to injuries and due to opt-outs and other things. So the more they play together, the more I think that you're going to see them improve. And this is one of those games that the only thing I see really getting in LSU's way – is if they outcoach themselves. If they outthink themselves in this game, then I think it could be problematic for the LSU Tigers. Because if you go guy for guy, dude for dude across the board, they win more matchups in this game. Now, being at home is going to help Auburn a little bit, but Chad Morris, Gus Malzahn have to find a way to get the run game going. Tank Bigsby needs to be big early because that's going to open up some of those runs with Bo Nix, and that's going to give him those shot plays with one-on-ones down the field.
Cole, before you go, you mentioned something very interesting there, being at home. And normally in the Auburn-LSU game, the home field should matter, doesn't always. But having been on the sidelines every week, and we're now knocking on the door of the middle of the season, what's it like on the sideline in terms of trying to interpret how much or how effective the crowd noise is for the home team?
I do think it helps a little bit. And I think, Paul, we all sort of had – this picture in this off season, when we heard that it was going to be 5,000, 10,000, 10%, 20%, no fans, family only, whatever it was going to be. I think at least I did, maybe you did. I think a lot of other people that I've talked to did. We just sort of had this, we had this picture of these cavernous stadiums that were just going to be silent and there was going to be no effect and no noise and no nothing. But I think when you get either 15, 20, 25,000 people in the stands, at least you get a reaction. And I think that helps with momentum. I think it does give the players a little bit something to feed off of, and it adds a sense of normalcy. Because when you're at home and you get any sort of reaction when things go good, that makes you feel like all is right in the world. Now, what I have noticed that none of us talked about before the season, Paul, is when you're at home and things go bad, it is a silence like I've never heard in a college football. It is an uncomfortable silence. You can hear anything in some of these stadiums when the momentum shifts away from the home team. Because you just imagine, you're only going to have 100, maybe 50, 25 visiting fans, it's not enough to make any sort of a difference in a Jordan-Hare Stadium, a Tiger Stadium, at a Kroger Field. You get nothing from that. And that's when I think some guys, it's a little bit easier to look around and say, oh man, how bad is this? Oh, this feels bad, because we're not used to silence in any portion of football. And all of a sudden when that happens, it's very different and very strange for some of these players when they should be comfortable and having a good time playing at home.
Cole Kublik on the call tomorrow, Kentucky and UGA. Thank you, Cole. Thank you very, very much. We'll talk to you very soon. We are heading to a break. It's been a busy one already. We are just loaded with many guests. We'll talk to Todd Blackledge a little bit later on the Alabama game, Chris Fowler later on the Ohio State-Penn State game. We just talked to the commissioner, former commissioner of the SEC, Roy Kramer. We began the show with Gus Malzahn, and we are coming right back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back, and Greg is up next in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today?
Okay, Greg.
Hey, just had a quick question. Is your hate for Nebraska just based off of our nearly 70% win percentage against the SEC? That's just an honest question.
Yeah, it is an honest question, Greg, and I had to think for a second because I can't remember the last time I saw a Nebraska win a meaningful game. I can quote Alabama over Alabama in 71, or Tennessee in 98, but I mean, it's been so long since Nebraska. I mean, you Nebraska fans, I'm all for your history. I'm not going to argue with you because
where were you at when Alabama was then? Where were you at?
Alabama
was terrible in the 80s and 90s. Where were you at then?
Greg, I don't really remember where I was. I know where I am. I know where I am now. It's 2020, and Alabama has won, let me think, at least 6 national championships since you've won your last half of one. Man, Andre, you go anywhere near Lincoln, Nebraska on your route?
Coach, I don't know if you hate it more in Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Lincoln, Nebraska.
For those who are wondering why all the hate, I was on ESPN this morning, and we were talking about Nebraska, you know, trying to play Chattanooga this weekend. I just gave an honest comment, and it seemed like the whole state of Nebraska, all 500 people that live there have really gotten upset.
Coach, I heard you earlier when you slapped that guy around and punched him out. Oh, man, I said Coach Feinbaum is being mean today.
but Andre, I don't mind talking about Ohio State, but Nebraska, right. I mean, I am searching my memory bank. I think it's 1996 or 7, maybe 2000, the last time Nebraska played in a meaningful game.
Coach, listen, they knew the rules when they left the Big 12 and went into the Big 10. If you don't like the rules and regulations in the Big 10, leave the conference. But I don't know where they would go. Maybe they could go back to the Big 12.
I don't know. They don't want – Andre, they don't want Nebraska back after all the nasty things Nebraska said about Texas and Oklahoma.
Well, hey, man, becoming independent, like Notre Dame.
Why not?
BYU. But if you don't like the rules and regulations, they had already scheduled the game, and then they went to the Big 10 – to petition to see if the Big Ten would allow it, and they told them no. And that those are the rules and regulations of the Big Ten. But, Coach, I don't think you're going to be welcome in Lincoln for a while.
I will say one thing. I've been to two games out there, and they were both great experiences. And it's sad to say that I've been to Lincoln for the final time because, no, I'm not going back with these crazies.
Happy Halloween, Coach. Have a good week.
Thank you very much. No, it's, there are a lot of places I'm not going anymore, but that's one of them. Appreciate the call. Let's check in with Brad, who is in Pensacola. Brad, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's up?
Hey there. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm fine. Just wanted to talk about, because I'm an Auburn fan, and I wanted to talk about how, you know, unpleasable I think the fan base is. You know, when we talk about, you know, Gus Malzahn being on the hot seat, I can't see how he would think that, considering the fact that he's the best that we can do. I can't think of a guy that would do a better job. I mean, he's keeping us competitive with Alabama, Georgia, and LSU, our biggest rivals. And, when you add that up, I don't think there's anyone that could do as well as he does. I think Gus Malzahn is the ceiling for Auburn. And,
yeah, Brad, we talked to Coach Malzahn earlier today, and I tend to agree with you, and it's almost become a cottage industry to bash Malzahn, and I know the program veers toward that line that frustrates fans, but when you study his record versus everyone else, it's pretty good, especially against the rivals that it's important to beat. Dennis is up next in Atlanta. Dennis, thank you, and good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul, this is my first time calling in. And, Paul, I want to go back to the part of the conversation that you had with the commissioner, former commissioner, Kramer.
Right, yeah, Roy Kramer.
You guys kind of touched on expanding the CFP to more teams. Well, my question is, why the D1 playoffs can't set up a bracket like D3 ball? Like D3 playoffs, I'm sorry.
Well, I will regurgitate the commissioner's line because I've heard it so many times from him and his successors. And they continually say that expanding the playoff will devalue the regular season. I don't really think that is going to happen. I think we love college football, whether there are 8 games, 9 games, 12 games, or a 5-game playoff. I just think the CFP is a flawed arrangement right now, and I know a lot of people think that there maybe aren't enough good teams to expand, but to me, by adding another weekend or whatever, it would just add excitement to the game at a time when it needs it. Because one last thing, the CFP is going on at the worst possible time for college football because the NFL playoffs have begun. And they're not having any trouble attracting viewers to the wild card games. Hey, thank you. For some reason, I think we may have lost you there. But let me go to Judge Chris in Raleigh. You're up next, Judge. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum.
Hey there.
Hello.
Yeah, Chris, you're on.
Hey, a shout out to my friends Chief David and Ange Osbug, and they're gonna be, I think, up in Happy Valley. Is it gonna be very happy for Penn State in Happy Valley?
That would not be my best guess, Chris. No.
Yeah, I'm thinking Well, I hope they do well. Have, what about down in wherever it is in Mississippi, that where Leach is? I think.
Well, yeah, Leach is traveling to Tuscaloosa tomorrow, so I don't think that's going
to
end well either.
Tuscaloosa. I think that's going to be 56 points hung on him. I think 56. I'll bet you on that one. But have you thought about? You can't write a historic situation more than this. You had Coach Saban, the dean of coaches, come down with at least a positive test. Now you've had Trevor Lawrence. Isn't this such a historic, odd, unusual time?
Yeah, Chris, I couldn't help but think about that last night when the news broke, because 2 weeks ago we were still living minute to minute on whether the biggest name in the game, coaching-wise, you know, had COVID, and now it's indisputable that Trevor Lawrence is the biggest name in college football. I mean, he has been that way since he showed up. And on top of that, the fact that we are, once we get through with this weekend, we're talking about the most anticipated game of the college football season, Clemson at Notre Dame. We're up against a break. We will take a timeout here. We hope you'll stick around. More of your phone calls, more guests. We've had a really good time with Coach Malzahn, Commissioner Kramer, Holly Rowe, live from Clemson. Todd Blackledge, he's on the call tomorrow night for State and Bama, and he will join us next.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Of course, the primetime game tomorrow night on ESPN, State in Alabama, an intriguing combination of a program that we all know about and one that has been rather confusing, and we're talking about Mississippi State. Todd Blackledge, part of the call tomorrow night in Tuscaloosa. So, Todd, thanks for joining us on these Friday afternoon visits. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about digging into Mississippi State, because everyone knows the narrative. They look great in the upset over LSU, and since then it has been a struggle.
Yeah, well, it has been. I mean, you know, offensively, everybody knows about Mike Leach's reputation and the air raid offense. And that first game, it was like picture perfect for him, because LSU played almost all man-to-man defense. They tried to pressure the quarterback, and that played right into the hands of this offense. And they got a lot of big chunk plays and, you know, set all kind of records with KJ Costello playing quarterback. And you know, so since then, teams have changed their style of how they're playing them. It's been a lot more zone defense. It's been a lot more rush three and drop eight, and that's given them more problems. They just have eliminated a lot of those big plays. To complicate matters, Mississippi State has not done a good job of taking care of the football. They've turned it over a lot of interceptions and bad turnovers. And now the thing that they have done well on the other side of the ball is they've played pretty solid defense under first-year coordinator Zach Arnett, and they're flying around and been very aggressive on that side of the ball. But offensively, it's been a little different deal the last few weeks because of the people have changed the way they've played against this offense.
Todd, in trying to understand where they are right now, I know they've had a lot of off-the-field defections or I don't know what they are. People are leaving the program. Is what's your sense of the cohesion of this team right now as it heads to play Alabama?
Yeah, you know, we just got off the phone, with Errol Thompson, one of their best players on defense, had a nice call with him. And we asked him about that. And he said, you know what? It's been zero distractions for the guys that are here. There's guys that are making decisions that are kind of business decisions and the best things for their career. And we wish them well. But in terms of the guys that are here, there's not a buy-in problem. There's not a cohesion problem. And, you know, I think he was very straightforward and very honest with us. And but on from the outside looking in, you would wonder about that, particularly when you have a guy like Kylan Hill, who has been such a productive player, who's made a decision to at this point now to opt out. It makes you wonder what's going on. But, you know, it sounds like certainly I think the bye week was very important for this football team in a lot of ways, not just to get some guys healthy and rested, but also to kind of, you know, get back to square one on some things. And, you know, I think that Mike Leach will do a good job here eventually. But right now it's pretty tough, particularly now when you've got Alabama as your next opponent.
Well, you've already seen it, Bama, so you know, yeah. Everyone knows what they look like. But I want to get into that because, you know, the conversation all week has not been about how well they play, but about losing Waddle. And there's quite a variance of opinions on his loss. Take that up for us.
Well, first of all, he's a special, unique player, one of the most dynamic players in all of college football. So you lose a guy like that, you're going to miss him. You're going to miss him in your offense. You're going to miss him in your return game. So, you know, I think that Shade Bolden will step into the slot receiver and do well. I mean, he did well against Tennessee. So I don't think it will, you know, dramatically devastate their pass offense, but you're still talking about a guy at some point in the season, you're going to really miss his dynamic playmaking ability, his ability to take the top off of a defense. And now all of a sudden that's gone. You still have, you know, Devontae Smith, you still have Mechie, who is really starting to come into his own. So they'll still be productive offensively, but they will miss Jaylen Waddle, not just because of his playmaking ability, but from everybody we've talked to within the program, his energy, his leadership, his competitiveness, all the things that he brought to the football team, you're going to miss. And you don't replace a guy of that caliber with one other guy. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes on. But this is an offense, Paul, you know, and it struck me last week as I was starting my preparation. And then we drew up some graphics and put some stats together, and it's interesting. You know, they are doing some of the same things offensively from a production standpoint that we saw LSU's offense do last year. And I'm not necessarily saying that Mac Jones is the next Joe Burrow. However, he's playing at a level and moving this offense in a way very similar to what we saw LSU do last year. Balance, explosive passing game, and a quarterback playing at a very high efficiency level.
Let me ask you more about that, because you know, there's a conversation that goes back and forth. Well, he's got the compliments, obviously, one less than he did, versus what he's doing. You understand that the role of a quarterback. How do you define his performance this year? Is it him? Is it the compliments? A little bit of both?
Well, it's both, and it's the, you know, and that, here's the other thing. The thing about LSU's offense last year, they had these same kind of wideouts. They had a great running back. They had a solid offensive line. And they had an outstanding play caller and offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, working with Steve Emsminger. And it worked perfectly for them. The difference was, I think they put a lot more on the quarterback because it was all five-man protection and all five guys out. Okay, so the quarterback had to make a lot of quick decisions right away. In this Alabama offense, I don't think they're asking Mac Jones to do quite as much, although he's extremely well prepared and he knows where he wants to go with the ball, and the ball's out of his hands quickly, and he's played as well as anybody in college football. But I think Steve Sarkisian, this offense is different because you know, they do a lot of things where they go max protection. They give him a lot of protection to throw the football downfield off of play action passing. So I think it's been a combination of the complementing players, a great offensive line, a quarterback who is playing well within himself and making great decisions, and an offensive coordinator play caller who's doing a beautiful job of utilizing everything he has at his disposal right now.
When you saw them last, the defense was struggling. I think that would be an understatement. What are you learning about changes or just adjustments? Because this defense is going to have to play better for them to repeat, not repeat, but to be the SEC and national champion.
Yeah, I think they are getting better. You know, I think since we last saw them against Ole Miss, I think that, you know, they knew, and Nick Saban said all along, you know, the questions they had was the inexperience in the back end of their defense. Outside of Patrick Surtain, he was the only returning starter. You've got some safeties that are starting and playing a lot of reps now that have not been regular guys, but I think they're getting better. It'll be a good test to see tomorrow how far they've come. You know, the difference between Mississippi State's offense and this, you know, that Mike Leach has and what they faced with Lane Kiffin's offense at Ole Miss. Ole Miss, you know, ran the ball well against Alabama in that game as well, and then got the explosive plays in the passing game. So it'll be interesting to see how far they've come. You know, a lot of people were saying, well, they don't rush the passer well enough. They don't have – their sack numbers are low. They're not creating enough pressure on the quarterback. You know, there's – you know, Nick always talks about affecting the quarterback. And they can affect the quarterback without sacking the quarterback, without getting him on the ground. And they do that by disguising their defense, creating some confusion. Even, you know, watching the Georgia game on film earlier today, you know, getting in passing lanes and defensive linemen knocking passes down at the line of scrimmage. So there's a lot of ways you can affect the quarterback. And I think they've gotten better since I last saw them and watching them against Georgia and Tennessee. I think that they are steadily improving on the defensive side of the ball.
Todd Blackledge, always so great with his time. Todd, thank you. We'll be watching tomorrow night. Always appreciate you coming on. And we are heading to the break. A lot more to do here on a busy, busy Friday afternoon. And we will come back and grab some of your calls after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome all of you back to the program. And Augie in New Orleans is up next. Go ahead, Augie.
Hey, Paul, it's great to have electricity. Something we take for, you know, granted, but when you don't have it, that's when you really appreciate the things you lose. Hey, I want to say congratulations to Dwayne for graduating. Paul, you've had a rough couple of days. You get the Frank in Queens. Really doesn't like Dan Mullen.
No.
But it seems like you've really stirred some stuff up in Lincoln, Nebraska. Now, we're going on the list of places where you are persona non grata.
Yeah.
Utah, entire state.
Yeah, I think it's and again, there is a danger of saying something on national television that then is aggregated to every crazy blog site in America. But I think the problem with people, I don't know if you've been to Nebraska, but I think there's just so little to do out there, Augie, that they fixate on little injustices, and you know they walk around with a chip on their shoulder because their program is no longer relevant, and they get upset about everything. What I said this morning on TV was not that big a deal.
No, but what you just said 2 seconds ago is. But I have been to Omaha for the World Series.
That's a nice place.
The old Rosenblatt. And that was
Omaha's a very nice city. And by the way, the two times I've been to games at Lincoln were fantastic. It was one of those memorable experiences that I'll cherish forever. But for a specific reason, Augie, is I'm never going back, I can assure you.
Well, there are three states you've got to stay out of. Nebraska, Utah, Michigan.
Yeah.
Now, select parts of California, you're definitely not welcome. Parts
and,
of Ohio.
And, you know, based on what's ahead of me in my life, I hate to miss on Utah because there are a couple of places there I would really like to go that are beautiful. But Michigan, I'm going to get over.
I've never been. I've been in and out of the airport in Detroit, but that's about it. Paul, did you see where USM is on their – Southern Miss is on their third coach?
Yeah, no, that's
they're in their third head coach right now. That's a program that's definitely imploding. And I like Blackledge. I think he's a great commentator, but I got to disagree. Mississippi State is in no way a test for Bama this week. It's going to be a rout, and I think you're right, Paul. I think the game that's most intriguing, two games, LSU-Auburn and A&M-Arkansas. And I think – since Miles is not playing this week, if Finley wins that game, no doubt there's going to be a quarterback controversy, regardless of how much Edo is going to come out in support of Miles. Anyway, Paul, have a great weekend, and can't wait to talk about what happened over the weekend on Monday. Take care.
Augie, thank you very much. And Casey is up next in Alabama. Hello, Casey.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, hey, I just kind of wanted to piggyback off of what Todd said earlier, talking about Jalen Waddle. And, you know, there have been talks about the playoff chances getting affected with him out. How do you feel about that?
I don't agree. Now, I understand, like everyone, his importance and his ability to change a game. But I think for anyone, and a couple of my colleagues have done this, to write Alabama off from winning a national championship is simply ludicrous. It may affect them in a game, but Alabama is fairly deep.
Right. And then one more question for you. With Trevor Lawrence out now with Corona, do you think that Mac Jones may slide up in the Heisman race now or what?
It depends. I think Mac Jones right now is a legitimate top three Heisman candidate. If he can continue at this pace, I think he'll get he'll be a finalist. I don't think Trevor will be affected if he misses. I don't think one game is going to make any difference. Now, if he misses the Notre Dame game, it could have an impact if he's out for an extended period of time. But I think Trevor is so far ahead of everybody right now. Not, I say so far, but I mean he is ahead of people. Nick is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Nick.
Paul, how you doing, man?
We're doing great. Thank you.
I just wanted to talk to you about Gamecock football. Got the week off, so I don't have to watch a loss. But I was wondering what you thought about Muschamp and what you think would happen for the rest of the year and his status throughout the year.
I think it's going to be week to week in terms of just the vagaries of the SEC. I just haven't seen much consistency, Nick. I'm pretty sure. I think the challenge is getting to 500 right now, and that may even be wishful thinking. What about you?
Yeah, I'm thinking for us, we have two or three winnable games left on the schedule, and I think if we aren't 500, I think he needs to go regardless. But if we don't have five wins and he stays, it has to be the contract.
And I do think that is going to create a lot of pressure for next year. And, you know, this year I don't see him losing his job. Bart is in Missouri, and you're up on the show, Bart. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking it. You may have covered it already. Florida has been fighting the COVID thing for a couple of weeks, and they're playing Missouri, my Tigers, this week. And I hadn't seen many updates besides everybody thinking the game wouldn't happen. It looks like it might be on. Do you have any intel on how that's playing out for Florida?
We talked to a reporter down there earlier, and Mullen is being predictably coy, all coaches are, about who won't be there. But the game will be on. The game will go on unless something just dramatic happens overnight with the testing, which I cannot imagine it going to. I think it's a real tough game for Florida. Coming off this, you know, I haven't played in 3 weeks. Missouri went out last week and had a huge win. So I think two years ago, I believe Missouri went down there and won. So that has nothing to do with tomorrow. But I think Missouri is definitely in this game. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against a break. A lot to do in the final hour. We'll head to Happy Valley. We'll talk to Chris Doering. We hope you will stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.